Thank you for your regular and generous support of Issues Etc. in the past year, 2008. A good summary of my hopes for Issues Etc. for 2009 are St. Paul's words to the Colossians. Pray for us, too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Thank you again for your support of Issues Etc. We'll continue defending the faith, teaching the truth, and making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ and Him crucified.
There's a passage where Paul says, if I live with you, that's good. If I die and go to heaven, that's better. And that's how I kind of feel about this decision. I've got two great choices.
One of the things that was said is that in your religion, you don't take a member of your family or anyone to a doctor. Is that the case?
No, that's just not true. It's actually the exact opposite.
We've anointed and consecrated this passageway, so symbolic, when the president-elect passes through here to become the next president of the United States.
Oh God, we consecrate Barack Obama to the presidency of the United States with assurance they will have the presence and power of thy son who said, I will never leave thee or forsake thee.
Well, you are the first minister I ever heard say being gay is a gift from God. I can tell you that.
You are the first two ministers I ever heard say being gay is a gift from God.
It's amazing with the abortion rate in the United States being no secret whatsoever. We're talking about a phenomenal and a sadly phenomenal rate for abortion in the neighborhood, about 4,000 a day. And then add that up, do the math over the last 35 years since Roe v. Wade. It's amazing how little we hear about adoption. It's often called an option over against abortion. Why is this? Why do so many in America go overseas to adopt? And is adoption really the best option for those who are considering terminating a pregnancy and abortion? We're going to be talking about all of that here for the first part of this hour of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll begin with this short conversation on adoption, then we'll spend the rest of today's program reviewing the best-selling book, The Shack, by Bill Young. I know it's sold a lot, and I know many people have read it. I have done a thorough study of it. We have some audio to play for you, and we'll do a review in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 13th of January. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, director of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on.
Why is it that so many Americans go overseas to adopt nowadays?
Well, there are two reasons. One is what you alluded to in your introduction, is that there are, relatively speaking, very, very few infants available for adoption. And most people would like to get as early a start as possible in parenting their child when they enter into adoption. That's one of the reasons. The second reason is that when you go to adopt an older child, often there are issues surrounding the exact custody and parental rights associated with that child. So I think many American couples have a lot of anxiety about whether once they've done an adoption, will that child be really theirs forever? Or will the birth mother or the birth father or the grandmother or somebody down the road raise their hand and say, that's my baby, I want my baby back? And although that doesn't happen very often, it happens often enough that it is, I think, a serious deterrent to people and a real fear factor that enters into people's decision making. So they just figure, you know, I'm better off going to Ethiopia or Rwanda or Romania or whatever to find a baby that I know is going to be my forever child, and then just get started parenting that child without any anxiety about who has the full responsibility for that child, because that anxiety and that uncertainty is a difficult cloud over the heads of the of both the parents and indirectly then for the child.
How would you evaluate the, I don't know if we can even talk about a system of adoption, but the way that adoption laws and the regulations surrounding it stand today in the United States?
Well, you know, there's a lot of variation from state to state. Okay, that's the first thing you have to say, is that this is governed by state law and not federal law. But having said that, you have to say that the emphasis is on doing what the birth mothers want for at least two reasons. One is that there has been sort of a general trend that says that the rights of parents are preeminent over the rights of children. So, you know, as you alluded to, if the mother has the decision and has the choice to terminate her pregnancy, you know, that means she has kind of life or death power over the infant. And so the trend in law is to say that, well, the birth mother's rights are really preeminent in comparison with any prospective adoptive parents' rights that there may be. And then the second reason that there's so much emphasis on birth parent rights is, of course, that they hold the strong cards in the sense that they're the scarce resource here. You know, there are so few women who want to put their babies up for adoption in the first place that everyone bends over backwards to do whatever they want and to, you know, and to accommodate them in every possible way. And so, you know, therefore, there's just more. It's harder to terminate parental rights. There, if you do an adoption successfully, you have more responsibility. The adoptive parents have more responsibility to keep the birth parent in the loop. Open adoption is much more common than it ever was. You know, and I think that's part of the reason is that it gives the birth mothers something that they want, so that they're going to be willing to relinquish their children for adoption. And so all of the trend has gone in that direction. And therefore, sadly, it often turns out that the relationship, the parental relationship that the child ends up with, turns out to be less stable in the end, because we do so much to accommodate the birth parents and to try to keep the birth parents in the child's life that often we've bent over backwards too far. We've got parents that, you know, really aren't really likely to shape up within a relevant period of time. And the kids would be better off if they could just go with an adoptive parent and have a childhood, and then maybe when they're 18, if by that time their birth parent is really ready to have a relationship or whatever, then they can have some kind of relationship. But in the meantime, they've been able to have some kind of stable childhood. That, sadly, is much less common in my view than it really should be, because there's just so much, you know, when children come into protective services custody and so on, there's so much done to try to reunify the family, and quite often the law drives the kids back into the birth parents' homes, even when the social workers have serious reservations about what they're doing. It's hard for them to actually do a termination, and that's, I think, to the detriment of kids.
Is adoption prohibitively expensive?
Well, it is. It can be. It can be expensive. I mean, typically, when you go overseas, you know, you're talking about, you know, $15,000 to $25,000 if you're doing an overseas adoption. Local adoption, domestic adoption, is not so expensive, but you're usually then looking at children that have come to you through the through the local social services networks, and those kids have, you know, usually have been through the process I just described of having been, you know, back and forth until you're 100% sure the birth mom will never get it together. And so by the time those kids are free for adoption, there are, let us say, other costs associated with adopting them. You don't have as much out-of-pocket expense. In fact, you may not have any out-of-pocket expense. But in fact, the child that you have is a child who has significant difficulties, often behavior problems and learning delays and so on and so forth, that have resulted from the years of neglect and instability that they've already been through before they ever come into your home. So for a lot of people, they look at that and they go, wow, that's a huge cost. I'd much rather shell out the money and go to Tasmania or wherever, you know, to adopt a child who hopefully has not been through as much as some of the kids have been through that come through the foster care system.
A couple other questions. What are your thoughts on adoption vis-a-vis gay marriage? Because many people are saying, look, there are a lot of gay couples out there. If they can't have marriage or a civil union, they want to adopt children. About 1 minute for your thoughts there.
Well, you know, I think the idea that gay couples have a right to adopt, I think, is completely false. That's completely wrong. No one has a right to adopt. Adoption needs to be a child-centered in social institution. So our thought is that we do adoption because the child needs a parent. We do not do an adoption because a parent wants a child, you know. So we have to keep ourselves focused in the right way. Now, having said that, there may be cases where the best parent for a particular child is a gay couple. That's possible. I don't discount that as a possibility. But to reorient the adoption law to say that we should not take any notice of whether we've got a gay couple or a straight couple, or indeed any couple at all, we've got a single person, to forget about the reality of family structure and how important that is in a child's life, and to write that out of the law, that is a huge mistake, in my opinion, because most kids, by far and away, kids do best with a married couple, mom and dad. Kids need the parental inputs from both a mother and a father, male and female. They need both of those things. And to sweep that away under the guise of non-discrimination against adults, that in a fundamental way changes what adoption law is all about. It becomes instead of being child-centered, it becomes adult-centered. And whatever we do, I think we don't want to do that.
Jennifer Roback Morse is director of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason University, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being our guest.
Todd. Thank you so much.
You know, when you think about adoption, you can think about infertility, you can think about gay marriage, you can think about how much it costs and all the regulations surrounding it. Here's the best thing about adoption. The baby comes to term and has parents. A baby gets to live. Remember that the best option is always that the baby gets to live. That's the first consideration. What does abortion do? Abortion rules that consideration out from the outset. Adoption is the very best option to the tragedy that is and continues to be abortion in our country. Now, when we come back from this break, we're going to review Bill Young's book. It's sold everywhere to everyone. Everyone's read it. It's called The Shack. We'll review this book on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A Serbian conversion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
For 26 years, Dr. Stojan Adcevic of Serbia performed an average of 100 abortions a week, making him the most renowned abortionist in that country. Today, he is the leader of Serbia's growing pro-life movement. In a recent interview with a Spanish newspaper, Dr. Adcevic said that the extraction of a still-beating heart during one of his procedures awakened him to the life of the unborn. He then became the first Serbian doctor to refuse to perform abortions. He has also returned to the Orthodox faith of his childhood and champions the restriction of abortion in Serbia.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.